This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. A new law affecting transgender youth is scheduled to take effect in less than 30 days. But will it? The ACLU of Ohio has sued the state to try to stop the law. House Bill 68 restricts the health care that transgender minors can receive and restricts the school sports they can play. Joining me now to talk about what's next and how families are preparing for what's ahead are University of Cincinnati College of Law professor Ryan Thorson. Welcome, Ryan.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Equitas Health gender-affirming care clinical specialist, Jonah Yokoyama. Thanks for being here, Jonah.
Hi, thank you.
UC is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Ryan, House Bill 68, as it was passed by Ohio lawmakers, has these two main provisions. Can you explain just briefly what the law seeks to ban in terms of care for transgender minors and school sports participation for trans athletes?
Yes. Yeah, so the bill contains these two different provisions targeting gender-affirming care for kids, but also targeting transgender children's participation in sports. And the gender-affirming care ban is very sweeping, prohibiting things like puberty blockers that delay the onset of puberty so that transgender kids can make a choice about whether they want to continue with gender-affirming care, hormones, and surgeries, which are almost never performed on minors in the United States. The sports ban bans transgender girls from participating in girls' sports in the state of Ohio in a very blanket way. It replaces a rule from the Ohio High School Activities Association that had a more nuanced determination of transgender participation in sports, and instead says in K through 12 sports and college sports, transgender girls cannot participate with their cisgender peers.
Okay, so there's no case-by-case kind of review. It's just a ban in terms of the sports.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. The law, I know, is, as I mentioned, is scheduled to take effect in less than 30 days. Just last week, the ACLU of Ohio filed suit to try to stop that from happening. Ryan, can you briefly explain what the ACLU is arguing in that lawsuit?
Sure. So there's one provision that's kind of a procedural provision arguing that the Ohio legislature impermissibly combined two bills into one bill. And if you look at the way that the bill is written, you know, these were separate bills for a lot of the legislative process, and then at the last minute were yoked together. That's supposed to be impermissible under the Ohio Constitution. So that's one procedural challenge that they've brought. In addition, they've argued that the healthcare ban violates the equal protection under the law, that it's treating transgender children differently than cisgender children who are able to use the same medications and many of the same medical interventions to treat other medical issues, but aren't able to use it as a part of gender-affirming care. And then finally, the law challenges parents' ability to provide health care for their children, saying that this is protected under the Ohio Constitution and that the law impermissibly restricts parents from making decisions that are best for their children.
Mm-hmm. And Jonah, that the lawsuit, there's this big focus on the part of the law that deals with gender-affirming care. What are you hearing from patients and their families about that? What are their concerns about that aspect of the law?
Well, I mean, gender-affirming care is life-saving care. I have actually had two 16-year-old trans kids commit suicide this year since House Bill 68 went through, and I've had so many others who are in crisis because they're worried about losing their access to care. It is something that is completely discriminatory. Families are moving out of state. They don't feel welcome. Kids are being told by this law, it's telling them you are not valid, you are not welcome in Ohio.
Oh, Jonah, I'm so sorry about those two patients that you talked about. That's just heartbreaking. Ryan, more than 20 states have now passed laws that are restricting or banning this gender-affirming medical care for transgender minors. Many of those states are facing lawsuits over those laws. What have courts been deciding in these cases? Do we have decisions that we can look to?
Yeah, so initially, many of the district courts ruled against the state, saying that these bans were unconstitutional for a variety of reasons. In many instances, they were explicitly just banned at care for transgender kids, making it sex discrimination under the Equal Protection Clause. Courts found that often the scope of the bills was far broader than was necessary to pursue what the states deemed their legitimate interests. And so many district courts struck them down. It's been a bit uneven in the courts of appeals, where the Eighth Circuit has said that these laws are unconstitutional, where the 11th Circuit and the Sixth Circuit have seemed to indicate that they are permissible and can take effect. Mm-hmm. The Supreme Court precedents on sex discrimination seem to indicate that these laws do violate the Equal Protection Clause because they treat transgender kids differently than cisgender kids on the basis of their sex or on their sex characteristics or on their sex stereotypes. But we'll see what the Supreme Court does with these cases when they inevitably reach the Supreme Court.
We're talking about what's next with Ohio's controversial House Bill 68. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk at wvxu.org. Jonah, you've clearly been working with patients and families on the gender-affirming care part of this legislation, but there's also the part of the bill that addresses sports. Are you hearing much from patients and their families about that? Sports can be such an important part of a young person's life.
Yeah, I mean, so a lot of youth participate in sports for fun, not to be super competitive or elite athletes. It's for fun, it's for physical health, that sort of thing, mental health as well. There's so many benefits to being involved in sports. But we're seeing, again, that youth are not feeling welcome in this state because of what they're being told about their participation. And I want to point out that these laws focus on trans women and trans girls, and they leave non-binary folks, intersex folks, and trans boys, trans men, out of the conversation, which is really kind of strange to me. If we're the sort of presumption is that trans women and trans girls retain some sort of like masculine advantage in sports, which to me is really sexist. We're saying that what testosterone confers such a huge advantage. What that's ignoring is the wide variety of just human diversity and how many different ways that we are in development during youth. And just saying that blanketly, for some reason, trans girls have this advantage. And that's just not the case. And if you look at the Olympics, the IOC has allowed, officially allowed transgender participation since 2005. And in all that time, there has been one trans athlete that won a medal, and that was in soccer, on a women's soccer team. So that suggests to me that, hey, there's not some amazing advantage. And, all the other major studies have shown the same thing. The Canadian Center for Ethics in Sport studied from 2011 to 2021 all the pertinent scientific findings related to trans women in elite sport. And they saw no scientific findings that supported excluding or banning trans women or trans girls from sport.
So is this another aspect where you're hearing from patients that they just, you know, it just piles on to their trauma, the kind of crisis they're in?
To a degree, yes. But there have been, I believe it's under 30, I think it was 27 trans girls that have participated in sports in Ohio the last 8 years. And so, I mean, we're talking about super small numbers of people who are actually participating in the kind of sports that the state is trying to ban them from. But there are avenues for people to participate in more co-ed or leagues that are not officially through schools or NCAA. So we see a lot more people playing in those avenues than we do in official sport, you know, through the state that is affected by House Bill 68. And so, yes, there are people who are worried about that, but the amount of people who are participating at that level, it's really super low numbers.
You mentioned before that gender-affirming care can be life-saving care. Mm-hmm. I want to mention to our listeners that if you are in crisis, if you know someone who is in crisis, the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline number is 988. Ryan, how have the Ohio High School Athletic Association and collegiate sports governing bodies addressed the question of trans athletes in the past before House Bill 68 was kind of looming?
Yeah, definitely. So the Ohio High School Activities Association had a set of guidelines in place that allowed trans boys to continue participating on girls' teams, trans girls to continue participating on boys' teams, regardless of what medical intervention they had undergone. And then it also had rules saying that if trans girls wanted to participate on girls' teams, they had to show that they had been on hormones for a year or that they didn't possess any physical advantage relative to cisgender girls their same age. And similarly for transgender boys, there was a rule in place that said that transgender boys could participate in boy sports so long as any testosterone treatment that they had received did not give them an advantage over cisgender boys. And that was done on a kind of yearly case-by-case basis. And that kind of rule, even though it does bar some children from playing sports, at least allows many children to participate in sports consistent with their gender identity and addresses some of the concerns, valid or not, that lawmakers have raised with transgender participation. There's a new rule coming from the Biden administration that was proposed over a year ago that essentially says that the kind of rule that Ohio has adopted that's just a blanket prohibition on transgender participation in sports, that is a violation of Title IX of the Education Amendments of 1972, where these more nuanced avenues may strike a better balance at allowing a lot of kids to play, even if in some instances they bar kids from participating.
I want to point out that the funny thing about rules like that that specify testosterone levels is it doesn't take into account the natural range of testosterone and estrogen that people have. We're not made from, you know, a cookie cutter mold. There's such a wide range of bodies and heights and musculature and nervous system reaction times that we can't just assume that a certain level of testosterone gives an advantage. And it also ignores the fact that cisgender women and girls may have various conditions that have high levels of testosterone just naturally in their bodies, or intersex folks completely are left out of that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Ryan, you mentioned this federal Biden administration proposal that would forbid these outright bans. I believe it's supposed to take effect later this year. What would that mean for something like House Bill 68, and what would it mean for schools and the KHSAA or the OHSAA and all these different organizations that are trying to figure out how to make all this work?
Yeah, so the Supreme Court and federal courts generally have given a lot of deference to the Department of Education in how it understands Title IX. And so the rules would essentially say, look, under Title IX, these kinds of blanket bans are just blatantly discriminatory. They go much more broadly than needed to advance, you know, whatever interest the state is asserting. And so federal courts are likely to give that some more credence when they're evaluating these claims, essentially saying, you know, to the extent that any of these interests are legitimate, these rules are just much broader than necessary and therefore violate federal law. And that will be an extra aid to some of the existing lawsuits that argue that these are even unconstitutional because they violate the Equal Protection Clause.
Jonah, what do you think that could mean for people that, you know, your clients, your patients who want to play sports and then maybe are subject to these case-by-case kinds of situations where they have to, you know, get tested? Or what are some of the things that people might have to go through to just be able to play on the team that aligns with their gender identity?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's going to vary greatly what people's experiences are. Trans girls and trans women in sports typically have much more of a focus and a magnifying glass put on them and their participation because of just assumptions about advantages that they might have. So we have already seen challenges in the state of Ohio where folks are supposed to be able to question someone's gender identity and have to go through examinations of even their genitals. Can you imagine that, being a youth trying to participate in sports and having to show your genitals to prove who you are? Now, the nasty thing about how that was written is anyone could accuse anyone. So random, you know, cisgender girls, trans girls, everyone would be subject to just being said, hey, I don't know that I believe you're who you say you are, and then have to go through a genital exam. That is just absolutely ridiculous for youth to have to go through.
And what could be the impact of that for a young person?
Absolutely.
I mean, just psychologically, emotionally.
Yeah, puberty's not a great time for pretty much anybody. Nobody needs to go through that. And you know, trans youth and trans adults are subject to high levels of discrimination from family rejection, to jobs, to education, assault. The level of suicide attempts ranges from 44% to 46%, depending on what you look at. And we're looking at higher suicide rates than veterans in this population. And it's not something that's due to intrinsically who they are because they're trans. It's because of things like this kind of discrimination, the societal pressure. So we are just going to be hurting youth who want to play sports. We are pushing them more towards mental health crises, towards suicide, towards feeling lesser. We are making them another different class of citizen.
And what are the legal implications of that, Ryan? I mean, just in terms of, I've got to imagine that there could, if I were a parent and somebody told me they wanted to examine my child's genitals, I'd file a lawsuit. I mean, what are some of the legal implications of that?
Yeah, I think this is something that lawmakers did not think through when they enacted HB 68. So HB 68 doesn't really say how a student's gender is to be determined, and that just opens the door to broad abuses. We saw this in Utah, where a school board member accused a cisgender girl of being transgender, and then that student was not transgender, but still received tons of cyberbullying, was targeted online, all this harassment from adults because these bills open the possibility of other people accusing people of being trans or having an unfair advantage and just license the bullying of kids. When it comes to genital examinations, I think schools are really running the risk of violating the civil rights of students, right? To either require some kind of physical examination or to violate their privacy by disclosing that students are trans when many of their teachers and classmates and other people don't know that they're trans. We have kids who have known that they were trans from a very young age, are on puberty blockers, are attending school consistent with their gender identity, and these kinds of bills really run the risk of exposing them as transgender in a way that just opens the door to lawsuits against the school district.
You make a great point, because most of the cases I know of someone being accused of being transgender in schools, they're actually accusing usually a cisgender girl of being trans, and then the bullying gets heaped on, just like you said.
Ryan, what are you watching for with this lawsuit that the ACLU of Ohio just filed? Do you think it's likely the court would halt House Bill 68 from taking effect, at least temporarily, based on what you've seen other courts decide across the country?
I am somewhat optimistic that a court will block this lawsuit from taking effect. I think courts, to their credit at the district court level, have been very skeptical about some of the claims that have been set forth in passing these bills, have really wanted to make sure that the bills are not interfering with the lives of trans kids, because some of the effects that they will have will be irreversible, right? These are kids who may be approaching puberty, who want and need puberty blockers when they reach that stage and won't have access to that care. So courts, I think, have erred on the side of caution in staying a lot of these laws to ensure that they are constitutional. And my hope is that the same will take place with the ACLU's lawsuit in Ohio.
And if that were to happen, Jonah, if there is a pause in the implementation of House Bill 68, what does that mean for the people that you treat, you know, your clients, your patients? I mean, that puts them kind of in a limbo, right? What does that mean for patients who are seeking gender-affirming care, for example?
Yeah, the not knowing is a stress on its own, and not knowing what your future is going to be as far as healthcare. It will give folks more of a chance to get grandfathered in, so to go ahead and start gender-affirming care before House Bill 68 is enacted, if indeed it does get enacted. So that will help, you know, several handfuls of families across the state. It's not going to help everyone, because, you know, most folks don't get started on hormones until they're 16 or so. Blockers can start earlier, but, you know, the final wording of the bill is going to matter as well. You know, we might see some changes happen between now and enacting it, if that happens. And I want to be clear, we don't know if that's going to happen. I really suggest that families out there do their best to kind of wait and see. There are so many people fighting this. There is hope out there for this. I want to be clear on that, folks. So, you know, we do have families that are, you know, waiting to press the button to move out of state if this does get enacted.
Well, I've been talking with University of Cincinnati College of Law Professor Ryan Thorson and Equitas Health gender-affirming care clinical specialist Jonah Yokoyama. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And I want to say again, if you or anyone you love is in crisis, the number to call is 988. That's the Crisis and Lifeline. Please call that if you're in crisis or anyone you love is feeling that way. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. Rob Fetters composed our theme music. And if you miss our program live, you can listen to Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.